This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. It's Legends Day today. We have Coach Jimmy Earle, one of the greatest coaches that was ever in collegiate basketball. And we want to let you know that this portion of his show is brought to you by At Home Care, and that's Melissa Warren's business. And they come into your house 24/7, take care of all your responsibilities, take care of you, make sure that all the errands are run. And all you have to do is just sit back and enjoy your place. And if that sounds good to you, give them a call at 713-4639. Pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And you can even go over to their place of business at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H. And that's behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. Well, Jimmy, it's always a pleasure to be with you. You're one of the most fun guys that I know. And, you know, there's so much going on in sports right now. And I'm one of these people, if I want to find out what's going on, I go to the top of the list. And you're right there at the top of the list for me.
Yeah, Truman, I appreciate those kind words, and I don't know about the top of the list. But it is a fun time.
It is, but, you know, things are changing so much, and to be perfectly honest with you, I kind of like the cowboy riding along the interstate on my horse trying to get the cows in and all those cars passing by. It seems things are changing too much, and I can't always feel comfortable with what's going on in sports now.
Well, it's a different day and time and different mindsets. It's just like we're talking a minute ago about the world peace situation, about him throwing the oboe.
And yes.
It's just a different time.
Now, you've been over referees, and you've had a lot of responsibilities as far as management of rules and things like that. If that had happened when you were coaching and somebody had thrown an elbow like that, because let's face it, I saw it, and I don't know how they're skirting around it so much, because I couldn't see anything could have been more deliberate in what happened.
Personally, I thought that he would be barred for the rest of the season and maybe a lifetime. But the NBA mindset is a lot different than the NFL mindset. And in basketball, the officials are very aware and very focused on any kind of contact above the shoulders because of head injuries.
Right.
And, of course, they called a flagrant two, and that's a technical foul with automatic ejection, but he should have been barred for the rest of the season or a lifetime because that was a malicious hit.
Do you think – what kind of message – we're seeing kids emulate a lot of these players, and it seems like in the NBA in particular – money rules everything. Star power rules everything. I mean, you've got players up there making multi-millions of dollars and kids looking at buying their things as their shoes and shirts and stuff like that. Is there any way that we can turn it around where it doesn't become just strictly a business and turn it back into a sport again?
Well, you're right. Follow the money, and it's the money trail. And coaches on the pro level especially, I had a good friend named Babe McCarthy who coached in the ABA years ago.
Yeah.
And he told me one time, he says, "Jimmy, how do I discipline a player that's making about 10 times more than I'm making? If I discipline him hard, he'll go against me, and the management the next year will fire me." Mm-hmm. So that's what's going on in major sports among the coaches. And then the commissioner, he doesn't want to make the owners mad because he might lose his job. So I don't know what the answer is. But as far as the young kids emulating the pro, they certainly are. They watch television. They see exactly what they do. They think they've got to have a tattoo if they play basketball. And they just – it's a bad time. We don't have many role models in professional athletes anymore.
It makes you – what? How in the world do we stay as good as we are in society with all the things that are going on in the thing. When I was growing up, and I'm sure when you were growing up, the sports stars were our role models. They were the ones that we emulated. We did what they did. And now I see what's going on. There should be some type of restrictions and rules. And you're right. If you've got a star, we can talk about Howard. He's pretty much said, at least the rumors are out, that he's wanting his coach fired because he doesn't like his coach. And when you got the tail wagging the dog, you've got a major problem.
It is. And in pro football, you've got the Peyton Mannings, and he is a role model.
Yes.
He never gets in any trouble. He's very humble about his athletic ability and his accomplishments. And he's just someone that the kids ought to emulate. But instead, they want to emulate someone that has the star power, that shows off during the game and makes signs and all that stuff. And I don't know the answer to it all.
You know, I don't really know what was all behind it, but in the NHL, the Predators have suspended a couple of their players, and here we are in the playoffs. And to me, that was sending a very positive sign that our players are going to have to do what they're supposed to do. Even I don't care how big a star they are, and what's at stake is a championship. We're going to make them follow the rules. Now, wouldn't it be great if everybody would stand in line there?
It certainly would, and I saw that. I could not believe that. If I was a member of the Predators, I wouldn't want him on the team. Here you are in the second round of the playoffs, and a guy stays out to 4 o'clock in the morning on the day of a game, and that night he just plays terrible. So he let his team down. So they don't need him. And a player like that ought to be severely punished for the rest of the season.
But how many teams would have done that, because they're all wanting that championship. It's all about right now and what we can get right now.
Exactly right. Yeah. Different day and time and different mindset. I'm thinking about the days of the Bubba Murphys.
Oh, my.
Who was a disciplinarian. You don't find those today.
No, no. Bubba Murphy, General Nealon, I mean, all of those people. If you didn't, I don't care how good you were. And I remember when you were coaching basketball here, and you were one of the most successful coaches in the nation, you brought in some of the best stars, and you always had a lot of respect from those players. How did you recruit those players? Because you had to go talk to them. You had to go talk to mom and dad and all of that. But I know you had to be straightforward with them and tell them what was going to happen when they got here.
Well, Truman, you have to be selective in your recruiting. And one thing that I am very proud of is the players that we recruited graduated and got their degrees, and they were good citizens. One of the things I'm proudest of is the 10 years I was head coach, we did not have a single player in trouble with the law.
That's great.
And our own campus, and we had player 1 year go to the dean's office, and that was it. But otherwise, and I think of a kid, I shouldn't say a kid, he's not a kid anymore, but Chris Harris was a player from Knoxville, Tennessee. He was a 4-year starter out here, and he later on coached at Siegel and had great success. But I never will forget sitting in his house, and I've told you this story before. His father looked over at me and he says, "Coach, if this young man ever causes you any problems, all you have to do is pick up the phone and call me."
And you had to have the biggest smile across your face when he said that.
Not many parents have said that.
No, because you and I have seen occasions over the last few years where parents will step to the media and talk about how terrible their son was and somebody violated something trying to deal with them. That has to be terribly frustrating to a coach.
When we were growing up, Truman, when you got in trouble at school, you would get in double trouble at home.
Right.
If you got a whipping at school, you'd get one harder at home. Now, I had a principal tell me a while back, now, if you discipline his child at school, the next day the parents with the child come to the school and blame the school.
I tell you what, coaching had to be, in your time, you guys had more control over what was going on.
Yeah.
But in today's time, it has to be an extremely stressful job because you're getting caught all the way around. everybody wants you to be a winner. They want you to be at the top of the heap, and you're getting paid good money to do there. But yet you're having to deal with all the discipline problems. And where in the world did we start where an athlete felt like that he was above everything and he doesn't have to follow the rules? And the coaches are really, if they don't really stand their ground, it can cause some really major problems.
Well, I think a lot of it, personally, I think a lot of it goes back to the little leagues and the junior pro leagues. The coaches don't realize what an impact they have upon those athletes and those young people. And they can start there with some discipline and with some life skills training and help those young people. And that's where it starts.
It's a matter of the coaches, but it's also a matter. I was at the games last night watching Little League age kids and watching them play. And I was sitting behind home plate in my easy chair, and I started listening to these parents hollering at their child, telling him where he needs to be in the field, repositioning him. Yep. And the kid is out there just totally confused because he's been told by his coach to do one thing.
Yep.
And I remember, and this has been a long time ago, Gilbert Sharon was my coach in Little League for the Yankees. And he would not let a parent interfere with what he was coaching. And that's the hardest thing to pass on to coaches now, that once they start allowing the parents to interfere with what he's trying to teach, then he's doing the kid a really disservice. He really is.
You're exactly right, Truman. I'm thinking in baseball, the days of the Jack Jollies.
Oh, yes.
Jack Jolly was a great baseball coach, and he was a disciplinarian.
Yes.
But those days are gone. And like you said about the parents, and there's some great parents out there, but there's some that just lose it when they go to a ball game with their child's playing, and they got to understand that the coach is coaching and they're there to enjoy the game and let the players enjoy it and have fun. Let the players have fun.
It all becomes their kid, and it's no longer part of the team. And I have seen that affect some of the kids out there, and a lot of them have great talent. I have seen that. But yet, they're just bombarded from all directions on what they need to do. And you're right. I mean, we were blessed in the time. Mr. Jolly called me about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And, you know, he'd been going through his surgery and all that and rehab and getting ready for baseball and the Chicago White Sox again. And he kind of chewed me out because I hadn't called him to be on my radio show. Of course, I was waiting for him to get healed up. But it was almost like I was 9 years old again. And I said, yes, sir, yes, sir. I'll have you on anytime you want to come. And I love having him on because he's such a wealth of information. And I love to go back to those times when sports were pure. They really were pure. Sports are meant for kids. They're meant for young adults. They're meant to be played at the highest level. But when an individual becomes bigger than the sport, it taints it completely.
It does. And you mentioned Jack Jolly. You're talking about Jack. Jack Jolly, to me, is a legend.
He is.
He was hard on his players, but all of his players love him now. And they dedicated that field the other night to Jack Jolly, which is long overdue. And the thing I felt so bad about is I didn't know anything about it, and I missed it.
You know, I didn't know anything about it. They called me and asked me if I would come, and I did. And if I had known that you had not gotten an invitation, I certainly would have gone by and picked you up and taken you over there because he thinks the world of you. Well, he just loves you.
Well,
but Jack Jolly, you know, it's not a hard thing when you mix love with discipline. It's not. I mean, they go hand in hand, and we seem to have been able to we've lost that art. We really have. It seems like we ought to get you and people like Mr. Jolly and others to have clinics with some of these coaches on how to deal with the players, even though they're getting pressure from the other areas. You know, there are things that really are. I love winning. I live and die with my teams when they're winning or losing. But still, I still have that feeling there are things more important.
Well, Truman, years ago in coaching, the respect of the players came first and then rapport. Mm-hmm. But with the young coaches today, rapport comes first, and then they try to get respect.
I remember back years ago when I was sheriff, on back during the early times, and I'm not going to say who the coach was, but he wanted me to call if any of his players ever got put in jail for being drunk or something like that, you know, misdemeanors. And I would call him. But one thing that stood in my mind is the player would always say, do not call Coach so-and-so, because they were scared to death that he would find out about it. And he had pressed that issue with the team. And I know that you would have been the same way.
Well, you know, it's just like when we're growing up. If we got a whipping at school, we feared going home. Mm-hmm. And they call it respect all they want to, but unless you've got a little bit of fear, you've lost them.
Now, you grew up not too far from here, didn't you?
Mac Menville.
There is something about, it must be the dirt or whatever. I mean, they grow a great crop of people over in Warren County. They really do. So many successful people, and I can't understand it because all you guys come here. You all come to Rutherford County, the land of milk and honey.
Yeah.
But I've got one of my dearest friends in the whole wide world, Dr. Ray Troop, moved from here to go to Warren County and be a physician. He's a general practitioner.
He's my mother's doctor.
And he loves her to death. And it's so interesting to talk to Ray when he talks about his patients because they're like his family. And like me, he should be retired. He should be living the good life. And he does, up to a point. But he's still... There's just something about the bond between him and his patients. And I see that with you and your ex-players, and of course, Mr. Jolly and his ex-players. It's just really something special. And I really don't want to see that to die in our coaches. Now, we have got a caller on the line. So, caller, welcome aboard with Jimmy Earle, Coach Jimmy Earle. Hello, caller.
Hello, is this WGNS?
It is.
We received some flowers today as part of your good neighbor.
We'll take care of that off the air. Someone, I was told there was a call, and apparently for the show, but apparently that wasn't it. So continue right along with Coach Earle.
Have they gone?
Well,
I didn't get to answer the flower call.
Well, you know no one's sending you flowers.
I'll have you know, in the last 10 years, I have received flowers from WGNS at least twice a year.
Oh.
And some of them are still alive, which is amazing. I don't know how they stayed alive that long.
You're talking about Mac Mabel Truman. I guess the man that started me in basketball, Joe Nunley.
Oh, love him to death.
He was my high school coach. He took me out of a PE class when I was either a freshman or sophomore, and he started me.
I'll bet you he was. I bet he caught your attention from the very start because he was such a nice guy, but you knew he meant what he said when he said it.
An excellent basketball coach, and you're exactly right. He was a disciplinarian.
Did you ever go to his cabin?
Yes, up at Vola, above the mountain. Yes.
That's one thing that in my life that I regret. He invited me a number of times to come to the cabin with guys like you and just lay back and have a good time and yak and talk about the things that are interesting to them. And I never was able to make that trip. And I've told little Joe that a number of times. In fact, I think he's invited me over there. I've got to go. Maybe you and I can go one time.
That'd be great. That cabin is still up. It burnt down, and they've rebuilt it.
Now, what is it? Do you get to go there very much? I mean, they're back home.
Yeah, I go every Thursday to my mother's.
Yeah. But do you, I mean, your class reunions and all that, do you guys get together
I got together with had Chuck Taylor with me. We went to Mont Eagle. I meet about three or four of them up there.
Mm-hmm.
About once to every 2 or 3 months.
What about Ron Fryer? You ever get to see him?
Ron Fryer lives in Mac Menville, but he didn't grow up in Mac Menville.
No, he didn't.
But I see him every now and then. One of my favorite people.
Do you think he has the same characteristics of somebody that was originally from Warren
yes.
County?
Yes, yes. He knows everybody in Warren County just about.
Now, when you were coaching, you were such an icon here. And I know that there are a number of players that were played for you that became very successful. Are there any that still stand out in your mind that you still really have a close relationship? Because I remember now the one that played for Austin Peay that used to cause us so much
trouble.
Fly Williams. Tell me about Fly Williams.
Fly Williams was a great player, but he was crazy. But he was a great player. He was the type of player, he was hard to defend. If you put a guard on him, you'd take him inside, and he'd just post him up and kill him. And if you put a big man on him, you take him outside.
So how did you work up a defense for him?
We zoned him most of the time. One time we're playing at Austin Peay, and we're playing what I call a maverick defense. We're playing a diamond and one. Mm-hmm. We're playing one chaser on Fly. Mm-hmm. And a four-man zone shaped like a diamond. Mm-hmm. Fly gets 35 points. Mm. So after the game, a sports writer from Clarksville asked me, what would you do different, Coach? I said, well, if I'd known Fly was going to get 35 points, I'd have put the diamond on him and I'd put the chaser on the other four.
Now, what would you have done if you had Fly Williams?
I couldn't have coached Fly Williams. He was, I don't say an outlaw, but at that time he did some things that we wouldn't allow in our program. But he's a great player.
I know you remember the night that they were here that everything broke loose.
Yeah.
I mean, it was. And I remember one of the – we were called over there, and I know one of the MTSU police officers actually had a heart attack when all that was going on. And it was such a mess. Yes, yeah. Nice bunch of people. I mean, they had a great bunch of police officers back there at that time.
We beat them – Austin Peay over there one night, a miracle. A minute and 38 seconds on the clock, Austin Peay had a 10-point lead and the basketball. And we beat them 3 points in overtime.
Now, how in the world?
Everything had to fall in place, and it was luck. A lot of it was luck, and we hustled, but a lot of it was luck.
We see now, say there's maybe a little over a minute left, and maybe there's an 8 or 9 point differential, and the coaches call timeout. Are you able to come up? I see them drawing and making little things and all that, and where they're going to be and how they're going to trap or whatever. Is that a possibility? Because I see you got five players on each side, and they're drawing up something that is going to work or not work. It has to be extremely difficult.
If you watch out here, if you watch the ball games out here at MTSU,
I do.
Kermit Davis does a great job at timeouts. He'll make adjustments, and I think you've got two outstanding basketball coaches in Rick Ensel and Kermit Davis.
Oh, I think they're top.
But in today's game, in answer to your question, in today's game, no lead's safe anymore. You've got the three-point shot, and then you've got the shot clock, which forces you to shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard where we could ice the ball and we could freeze it back then and we could go into a stall offense. You can't do that anymore with the shot clock like it is.
You think the shot clock was a great innovation? Of course, I know in some way they had to have it, but sometimes there's just so much that's going on to absorb it all.
Yeah, it's great for the fans. And it's great for the more talented team because it makes the other team just really play. And it takes the gamemanship, I think, out of basketball.
You look for more athletic players because you don't have that clock anymore.
Right. It's a faster game, and you look for shooters. One thing, though, I think is good about the three-point shot is it's put shooting back in the game. And it's made we have been mystified. Coaches have been mystified for years with athleticism, with running and jumping. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't understood that you have to put the ball in the hole to win. And the three-point shot has put shooting back in the game, and that's good.
You know, it's something that's rarely seen anymore is a top-notch shooter. You put a really athletic guy on a great shooter, it comes extremely more difficult for him. But to me, it opens you up for other things. And I don't know why it is, but the game of basketball has changed so much simply because the athletic guys are taking over from the guys who are, have more finesse and are really built for shooting basketball.
Yeah. Well, you've got teams running the motion offense, and there's more screening going on today than has ever been to get those shooters wide open. Also, with the shooters, it's made teams extend their defenses. You can't sag back anymore. You've got to get out there, and you've got to protect on the shooters on the three-point line.
Well, we've got another caller on the lines. Let's see if they're selling flowers. Caller, welcome aboard.
Coach, I'm for lots of looking, do you think that the pants that you wore had an effect on the opposition's shooting? Answer that.
Those have got to
that
be.
That was a legend just called.
That's got to be the worst looking pair of pants I have ever seen.
Tell me about those pants.
You should have seen the suit.
Was it a leisure suit?
No, it was a it was a plaid suit.
Ah.
And my wife sold it in a garage sale. I think I've still got those pants.
Did Frances buy that suit for you?
No, she didn't. She got better taste than that. But those pants were awful, awful looking. But at that time, they were in style.
Mm-hmm. Now, you could have but you know, most really great coaches, basketball coaches back then, were flamboyant. They really were. Look at Bobby Knight, what he used to wear.
I don't know if I was flamboyant or not, but those pants, the officials used to even say something about my pants before the ball game.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
That made you feel good, didn't it?
Yeah.
Now, we're going to have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Coach Jimmy Earle.
Okay, Murfreesboro, the quack is back. That's right, you heard it here first. The Ducks are back in town on June 23rd for the Sudsy's Car Wash Child Advocacy Center Rubber Duck Derby. We plan to float 10,000 rubber ducks down the Stones River, all to raise money for the Child Advocacy Center of Rutherford and Cannon Counties. $5 gets a duck entered into the race for a chance to win a $5,000 cash grand prize. Starting in May, you can adopt your ducks online at duckrace.com/Murfreesboro.
Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Jordan, an orthopedic surgeon with Middle Tennessee Medical Center. As the official health care providers of the MTSU Blue Raiders, we know the importance of getting players healthy and back in the game. Middle Tennessee Medical Center provides comprehensive orthopedic care with expertise to return each patient to an active and functional lifestyle. Our team is highly experienced in orthopedic and joint replacement surgery, which means better outcomes and quicker recoveries. To make an appointment with an MTMC orthopedic specialist, call 615-284-BONE.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, and AmeriCare Pest Control.
I've got pests, bees buzzing, rodents running all through my house, ants chewing wood, and look, there's a mouse. I'm overrun with pests, pests, but you're gonna be sure, safe and secure. It's the last rites for those pests. Call the best of the best to get rid of your pests.
893-7111. AmeriCare Services Incorporated. Call us today. 893-7111.
Now on Good Neighbor Events, we're going to look ahead at the coming weekend. This Friday brings the 4th annual Chief Johnny Mosby Memorial Golf Tournament. It's over at the Old Fort Park. There's a shotgun start at 8 o'clock this Friday morning. A team of four is only $300, and the proceeds go to help support the Junior Pro Golf Program that's named to honor this deceased leader of the Murfreesboro Police Department. Right now, you need to contact Justin Lemansky at 566-4686. Oh, Jazz Fest is this Friday and Saturday. Big event on the Murfreesboro Square. It's all free. Several mid-state authors will speak at the Lineball Library this coming Saturday from 2 until 4. It's an opportunity to hear their story and get an autographed copy of their book. That's this coming Saturday from 2 until 4 at the Lineball Library. And the big disc golf tournament is all day Sunday at Barfield Park. The March of Dimes for Babies is this coming Sunday, and that starts over at Middle Tennessee Medical Center in front of the DePaul building. Registration's at 1 o'clock and the walk is at 2. For more information, call 399-3200. And those are Good Neighbor events.
This Memorial Day weekend, May 26th through 28th, the Murfreesboro Noon Exchange Club presents the 4th Annual Healing Field, Flags of Remembrance, on Medical Center Parkway next to Belk. You can sponsor a flag in memory or in honor of any hero in your life for just $30 by calling 615-641-0121. Make this Memorial Day meaningful by sponsoring or visiting this year's Healing Field.
Hi, this is Mike, owner of Maple Street Grill, inviting you to come and experience our uncorked area. We also offer a new tapas and wine menu in our uncorked area. And Uncorked is open Friday and Saturday nights from 5 to midnight, now featuring live music from 9 to midnight.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS, AM and FM.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. Of course, we got Coach Jimmy Earle today, and want to tell you about one of our sponsors. That's Gordon Ralston Photography, 315 Hickerson Drive in Murfreesboro, and you can reach them at 396-8776 or on the internet, www.gordonralstonphoto.com. And that's Al Gordon, who is a master craftsman photographer, and Larry Ralston, who is a certified craftsman, and they're both hometown guys, are the most awarded studio in the Middle Tennessee area operating a full-service photographic studio in Murfreesboro. They specialize in weddings, high school seniors, and family portraits. Their work is classic yet current with a creative edge. Al was even awarded the Grand Award for the best wedding image in the world. Gordon Ralston looks forward to meeting you and will treat you like family. And they are two really great guys. Actually, Dr. Gordon actually wrote a book about baseball back during the real baseball era here, back in the 30s and the 40s.
I remember 50s. Dr. Gordon, yeah.
Yeah, great guy. Now, you were telling me something that I had forgotten, that when you came here and coached baseball, which I think was kind of like came out in left field for you, and you were looking for an edge, somebody that really knew baseball. Was it hard to find somebody in Rutherford County that knew baseball that well?
Truman, when I came here from Martin Junior College as an assistant basketball coach. There wasn't anything said about baseball. And Coach Murphy called me in the office, and about 6 weeks later, in the summer, it was in July, he says, "Jimmy, you're my baseball coach." And I tried to talk him out of it, and I said, "Yes, sir. Anything you want me to do." So the first person I called was Jack Jolly. And Jack helped us build that program. We had tryouts, and we worked out their summit at the VA.
Mm-hmm.
And
when his dad was out there?
Yeah, Mr. Jolly was out there. And Jack knew baseball, and I depended a lot on Jack, and he helped build that program.
Now, how did you get to know about Jack because of his ability to actually expertise in baseball?
Well, I had known Jack for a long, long time. Jack was an excellent football coach at Smyrna, basketball
mm-hmm.
coach.
He was.
And I knew Jack during his high school coaching days, and he could coach them all, and I also knew that he knew baseball because Mr. Jolly raised him.
You can mention almost any baseball player's name in the last 50 years, and Mr. Jolly knows who you're talking about. It's amazing his knowledge. And I tell you what, that's one thing. I have never been a Chicago White Sox fan, never. I've always was a Yankee fan my whole life and grew up that way. But I actually started supporting them some when Mr. Jolly told me that he was doing scouting for them because – you know, somebody that Mr. Jolly would work for has to be pretty high up on the
right.
level.
Yep.
And I'm so tickled that he's still going to be doing some scouting this year. And it just seems like things are back to normal again.
That's exactly right.
But his ex-coach, Chicago White Sox, went down in the Marlins down in Florida. And I think there was a little row over that. I think he said something that was maybe too complimentary about Castro. And then, of course, you know that's little Cuba down there. Yeah. So that turned out to
he
be a little bit.
He didn't make many friends down
that
there.
That was a little bit of a mess. But I never thought he would apologize, but he sure did.
That's a little over the top. And that was... He's certainly not in a good position to make anybody down there mad and say something complimentary about Castro.
Well, tell me about your early baseball teams here at MTSU.
Well, we had good players. And I learned a long time ago, if you're over your head, and I was over my head as baseball coach, that you surround yourself with intelligence. And the first one I got was Jack Jolly. And then I called my friend up in Knoxville. And he decided, I told him, Jack Martin. And I asked him to come down here, and he did, and he helped us. And Richard Howell, who was a baseball player that played at MTSU, he came back as a graduate assistant. So we had good coaching staff.
Did you enjoy baseball?
I enjoyed it very much.
To me, that would be more enjoyable than basketball, but that's just me.
Well, when I was assistant coach, my day during the basketball season was I was on the varsity floor at 2:30. Until 5, I'd go home and get a sandwich, come back at 6:30 and coach the freshmen until 9:30. So that's how my day went. So in the spring, that was more like a vacation. But I enjoyed the baseball players. I really did.
Back then, you didn't hear a lot of violations in recruiting, or you didn't hear too many violations from NCAA, but now you seem there's a lot of that. Is that because the rules have changed? Is it because the pressure is more?
Well, I think also the scrutiny is more. They have an investigation. They have staffs, an investigative staff, and they're more active now than they were back then. They wouldn't that much scrutiny back then.
Now, you have worked with the officials for some time.
Yes.
And have you noticed anything different as far as the officiating? Because I kind of sense that I never understand about the foul situation, because you see them absolutely just manhandle each other. A foul is never called, and then somebody will reach out and touch somebody's arm, and they go by, and then the whistle blows.
I think consistency is the main concern of the coaches and everybody concerned. Be consistent. Call it on both ends of the floor the same. Officiating has improved, though, Truman. It has really improved. There's summer camps now. They have to video them. They critique them. They help them in summer camps. They help them improve. And the game has become so physical, and it's so much, the athletes are so much better and so quicker and so much more athletic. Officiating, I've seen some very poorly officiated basketball games, and I've seen some very good officiated basketball games. So as long as a human element is involved in officiating, you're going to have good officiating, you're going to have bad officiating. But I've seen good officiating a lot more than I've seen bad officiating.
Have you ever seen bad officiating cost a game to another team?
Several times. I've seen several calls that you don't call at the end of the game. For example, a Sun Belt game years ago up at Western Kentucky. Mm-hmm. They're playing San Diego State. And all Westerns got a one-point lead, and they call a lane violation on San Diego State with about 30 seconds to go. And they haven't called a lane violation the entire game. And Western wins by 1 point. So that's got to be the worst call at the end of the game I have ever seen.
It seems like everything near the end of the game becomes more intense, and there are more fouls called near the end of the game, even though I can't see much difference in the defense and how they're relating. Is that in the minds of the officials when that is going on? And then you'll see the clock stop more, and they'll go back and review things more.
Well, there's two things I think that has helped the game. For example, the scoring table. Years ago, they used to let the townspeople have the scoring table. Now
they still don't?
No.
Oh.
Now they've got to be certified by the league, and they've got to be certified. Years ago, they didn't have to be certified. The fouls at the end of the game, we preach on that. It has to be a sure foul. In other words, don't call a phantom foul. Don't expect or anticipate a foul. Mm-hmm. Make sure there's contact involved and a foul is there. But one thing fans will complain about, there's so many fouls. There's 21 fouls called against us and only 13 against so-and-so. Well, mm-hmm. You've got to look at the defensive. One team might be in a full-court pressing defense. The other team might be in a drop-back zone defense. So you're going to have a difference in fouling.
And some may be shooting jump shots, and the others may be driving all the way to the goal.
That's exactly right. They may be more aggressive with the ball. You're right. Exactly.
And I'll bet you guys preach the fact that you don't take over the game. Make sure that when you blow that whistle, you know what you're doing.
Because that's right.
I know that, of course, you know Russ Pulley, who is an SEC official in football, and he says that's one of their number one priorities is don't overreact. Let it sit in your mind to make sure that this foul has occurred before you actually blow that whistle.
Let the game come to you. Something that's very important, Truman, is the pregame. It's just like a team sitting down and going over the game plan before the game. The officials have a pregame, and they sit and they talk to each other about the two teams that they're going to officiate, what their tendencies are, and they explain positioning. How are you going to officiate the post offense and the post defense? Mm-hmm. And make sure that the center official stays back and helps, because this team will probably press a lot. And that's the pregame is very important in terms of preparation for officials.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with that, because I didn't realize that it was that so intense, their preparation. And that's with everybody, because Butch Campbell, you know Butch, he's been on the show a few times, and really think the world of him. And of course, he does the time clock. But he was telling me that the officials get with them and everybody concerned, and they tell them what the game plan is and what you're going to have to do and all of that. And you don't really think of officiating being that complicated.
Yeah, it's very complicated. For example, in the Southeastern Conference, let's say at Vanderbilt, we have the pregame, and the officials discuss everything. Then they film the game. After the game, each one of the three officials is given a DVD of the film of the game. Mm-hmm. And they need to look at that and see the mistakes that they made. And if they made mistakes, they need to call the commissioner or they need to call the supervisor and discuss those mistakes.
Now, you have to deal with a lot of that. And that has to be a very difficult thing to go in and look at all of these things, because I'm sure you watch a lot of film.
I see a lot of film, yes.
And you know, we have got instant replay film on every sport just about now. And a lot of times I will look, and I cannot determine in my own mind whether the call was right or not right.
Well,
do you have a lot of that?
After the game, Truman, I'll go in the dressing room, and I'll get with what's known as a crew chief. One of the three officials will be named the crew chief, and he's in charge of the crew. I'll talk to him, and then I'll talk to the other officials about certain calls at 4:50 the first half or 4:50 the second half. What did you see when you called a block on so-and-so? Mm-hmm. Or what did you see when you called a foul on this post guy? Or what did you see when you called a foul on a rebound over the back? Mm-hmm. And we'll discuss a lot of the plays after the game.
Now, when the season's over with, and you've gone through all the things, does it ever reach the level of the game is getting to be a little bit too rough? What do we need to do to slow it down? Because I know I have seen, especially NBA games, worse than college, where the referees automatically, in the very first quarter, they'll start calling what you and I would call ticky-tack fouls, and it seems to make a difference with them.
Well, that's very important. The first 5 minutes of each half, the first 5 minutes of the first half, the first 5 minutes of the second half sets a tone for the rest of the game. So we tell the officials the first 5 minutes, make sure if there's any contact, it's called. And What you can also do is you can use preventative officiating. You can talk players out of fouling, for example, on contact. If there's contact in each side, you say, all right, boys, let's clean it up. And many times it works. If it doesn't work, if they don't respond, then all you've got to do is blow the whistle.
Now, when you have warned somebody like that, say you've got a center and a forward that seem to be not really enjoying each other's company, and you see it getting out of hand, and you make a statement to both of those players, you guys are going to have to clean it up, yeah, or there's going to be repercussions.
Many times officials will call a double foul. They'll call a foul on both of them.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens, then you go with the error, whoever gets the ball. But that sends a signal. All right, boys, this is the way it's going to be the rest of the game. Now let's clean it up.
Is it hard to detect the one who is the most aggressive and seems to be the ones that's causing most of it? Because I was watching, I think it was the Dallas Mavericks the other night, and their star player was being held by two or three guys consistently. And you could see the coach up there screaming at the referees, when are you going to do something? What would you do if you were monitoring that? How would you deal with that?
Truman, what happens many times is we miss the first foul,
mm-hmm,
and then we call the second foul. When a player reacts, we'll call the second foul. And we tell them, call the first foul, and then you won't have to worry about fouls anymore, the second foul. Make sure the first foul. And all you can do is talk to them, and if they don't respond, then blow the whistle. And we have what's called advantage-disadvantage. If one player is taking advantage of the other player, in your opinion, you call the foul.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much contact in a basketball game, if you call all the contact, you would be shooting free throws all night, and the fans, it wouldn't be a fans game. So you've got to use advantage-disadvantage, and you've got to call the fouls that's pertinent to the play, and let the other calls go and no call.
You and I both have seen fans that were extremely rowdy. Have you ever sit and watched or coached at a game where you really felt uneasy that this may get out of hand? Because I know there's some pretty rough places that you go to.
There's only one time when I was at Middle Tennessee that I really felt something bad could happen, and that was at the Little Red Barn in Clarksville, Tennessee, when Fly Williams was playing, and they packed that place, and it got really rowdy. It got bad. In fact, some of my players were hit at the end of the game.
Oh, really?
On the bench. And it was just...
From the fans?
Yes, from the fans. It was out of control.
Good night. I had never heard that one before.
Yep. It was totally out of control.
What was the reason behind? Because you and I remember the big rivalry at MTSU or MTSC at the time was Tennessee Tech. But then it seems like it switched almost instantaneously to Austin Peay.
Well, Austin Peay's basketball got good, very good. And ours got pretty good, too. Ours got very competitive. And so we automatically become rivals. And Tech's basketball was good, but it wasn't as good as Austin Peay or ours.
Did that ever foster into bad relationship between the coaches when you had something going like that?
No. Lake Kelly and myself
had
a good relationship. I liked Lake, and we got along well. But our fans hated each other. So that's just... That goes many times with rivalries.
And rivalries are good. I mean, that really does make sports. You have to have somebody that you really key on.
Really good. And I think back to our football rivalry with Tennessee Tech for years, and it was wholesome. It was good. And every Thanksgiving, you automatically ate the Thanksgiving meal, and then you went to see Tech and Middle Tennessee play football. That's just automatic.
And it was packed.
And it was packed at both places.
And if I remember right, they would actually oversell tickets, and you could take your seat, a chair out there, and watch the game.
Yep.
And I don't know what it was about Thanksgiving, but it was always freezing out there at that game. I mean, but you didn't want to miss it.
No.
I mean, when It seemed like sports were just in their really prime during that time.
That was a great rivalry. That was a great rivalry.
Yeah, and I remember, what was it, the totem pole? I think it was.
The totem pole.
Somebody was always stealing the other one's totem pole. I mean, it was all in great fun, but it just seemed like everything was great. Everything was harmless. It was just...
mischievous.
Yeah, it was just mischievous. Yep. And I miss those times. I really do. Now, if you, Jimmy Earle, if you had a dream of how basketball should be played and how it should be officiated, would you make any changes, which I presume that you would, and what would you do? Would you kind of mix what it used to be in the 40s and the 50s with what's going on now? And would it ever be a way where you can have athleticism and just pure basketball live together?
Well, I think the first thing I would do is widen the lane. Hopefully that would cut down on some contact inside. Mm-hmm. Instead of five fouls fouling out, I'd have it six. Keep your better players on the floor. And the dunk would count 1 point.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the dunk would count 1 point. The shooting outside would count 3 points.
I could go along with that.
And put more emphasis on shooting the basketball.
Yeah, the dunk is an athletic move.
Very athletic, and the fans love it, and the players love it.
And I have never been a big fan of the dunk. I don't know why. I remember when Coach Pate had the 1960 Tigers, the basketball team, which was the best high school team I've ever seen. And everybody on that team, both starters and subs, could dunk the basketball, which was rare back then, except for one player. He was one of the smaller players, and I think he could probably come close. And everybody got a big kick of it back then, and I still didn't see it. You know, if somebody's on the side of the court, like Jimmy Montgomery used to be, and just kept swishing, one right after another. Now, that was fascinating to me. Now, or somebody like Tommy Trott could go out there, bang, one right after another.
It takes a lot of skill to shoot the basketball.
It takes a lot of practice.
Yes, it does.
A lot of people think, well, of course, you have to have that hand-eye coordination to start with.
And you don't have the commitment that some of the players used to have. For example, Larry Bird, before every game with the Celtics, he'd shoot in the gym for 3 hours. He would shoot the basketball before the game.
Now, and never get tired until his back wore out.
He'd have a commitment.
Yeah.
But the players today do not have that commitment, I do not think.
I used to watch Bird shoot, and it was almost like it was magical. Yeah. Well, of course, he and Magic were big. You know, they were. That's one thing I liked about that era, because the respect that the players had for each other. You take Bird and Magic were the two big players back at that time, and it was something like they played better. They fed off each other. They wanted to beat the other guy no matter what it took. And you would listen to them talk, and they absolutely respected each other, but they would say during a game, I couldn't stand him because I wanted to beat him. I wanted to be better than he did. And, of course, a lot of that came from the media, too.
Magic Johnson was a great player.
Yes, he was.
He could play any position. He could play point guard, or he could play the post.
And that was a rare thing to have somebody that size back then.
I'll tell you this story, Truman. We played Michigan State when he was a freshman in East Lansing. We went up there and played him. He came in our dressing room after the game and shook hands with every player.
Wow.
Just as nice a young man as you'll ever meet.
He always seemed like he had that type of character. How was it guarding him?
He came down one time on the fast break, and I have never seen him. He went behind his back, and then the ball disappeared, and somebody laid it up and scored. And I turned around to my assistant coach, Stanley Simpson. I said, did you see that? He said, Coach, I don't believe it.
Hmm. You know, these kids that live and breathe whatever sport that they play, they can reach unbelievable heights. And I know that you remember, of course, his dad was a coach, Pete Maravich, who plays for LSU. he could do things with a basketball back then. And I couldn't even believe that you could
Unbelievable.
Do. I mean, it just shows what you could do if you aspire to do it and you take the time. But it has to pretty much take up your whole life when you're doing it.
If he ever got the ball on the fast break in the middle, it was all over.
Yeah. But you know who would guard him the best? He had the least production against the University of Tennessee than any other school back then.
Huh.
And back then, I think he was averaging something like 40-something points a game. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you.
The following is a demonstration of how quickly you can win big money with an instant game from the Tennessee
One
Lottery. What do you mean, one?
While you were talking there, I just scratched a buckets of cash instant game and won.
That's exactly my point. All it takes is a couple of seconds with an instant game from
the again. This time, red, white, and blue sevens.
Okay, you're fast. And lucky.
Well, like my mother always told me.
Many ways to win, starting at just $1. Instant games from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
Okay, so how do I look?
You look fine. You're just going in for ice.
Well, you just remember how this looks, because when I walk out of there, I'm going to look different.
What? How come?
Hey, I'm going in there to play an instant game from the Tennessee Lottery.
Okay, so what could you win?
$100,000.
Wow, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, well, will you see how it looks?
Walk in a regular player. Walk out an instant winner. Many ways to win, starting at just $1. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
HGTV, the leader in home design and know-how, has joined Shaw Floors, the leader in flooring and city tile and floor covering, the largest flooring retailer in our area, to bring you HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw Collection. Doug Young with City Tile.
Come to City Tile and see the new selections of the HGTV products exclusively at City Tile.
Your HGTV Home Flooring by Shaw authorized retailer. Visit citytile.net. City Tile and Floor Covering.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
Well, welcome back with Coach Jimmy Earle. It's been a really, really great show. Jimmy, it's always a pleasure to be with you. Is anybody you want to say hi to or bye to or whatever?
Truman, it's a pleasure to be here with you also.
You are one of the most fun guys. I wish everybody had the opportunity to be with you It's just you've been a good friend all these years.
Well, I
want to thank you for being on with me. It's always a pleasure, and it's always a great show, and people just absolutely still love you here in Rutherford County.
Thank you, Truman. You're one of my favorites, too. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jimmy. And we'll see you guys tomorrow at 2 o'clock.